Hello, and welcome to Teaching Briefs, a special educational series produced by the Speech Improvement Company in Boston. I'm your host, Dr. Dennis Becker. In this edition of Teaching Briefs, we'll be teaching you, if you can imagine this style, the only three ways to convince anybody of anything. Let me repeat that. In this edition of Teaching Briefs, we'll be teaching you the only three ways to convince anybody of anything. Today we're going to be talking about persuasion. It's one of the most frequently requested topics in all of the work that we do at the Speech Improvement Company. And we have clients throughout the world, and no matter where we travel, no matter what kind of business or industry our clients are in, there is this need to be persuasive. Now, sometimes they call it convincing, and there is a difference I want to point out between persuading and selling. So we are not talking today about selling skills. We're talking about persuading skills. Selling is a different process. It actually has a process, and there are steps that you follow, and there are categories of things that you need to do when you're selling. Persuading is different. And I want to be sure that you understand this is not a program about selling skills. We're talking today about persuading, interpersonal, persuasive capabilities. And I wish, you know, we're going to be talking about the only three very specific modes for persuading. We do have to give credit for today's information to Aristotle. That's right, 3,000 years ago, Aristotle introduced this information to humankind for the first time. And over the centuries, it has been Madison Avenue-ized and psychologized, and people have tried all different ways to rename it and rephrase it and give it their own particular stamp. However, it all comes back to this. There are only three ways, and they came to us originally from Aristotle, and when we teach it at the Speech Improvement Company with any of our clients, we teach it in this pure, straight form. So today we're going to go over it with you in the original form that was given to us by Aristotle nearly 3,000 years ago. Now, I know it sounds amazing when I say to you the only three ways to convince anybody to do anything. It's kind of like you expect me then to say, and if you act right now, we'll send you, you know, it sounds like one of those late night too good to be true and amazing commercial things. It's not that. It really isn't. These are the three modes of persuasion. Now, let's look at them one at a time. Now, I'm going to give you first the Greek word that Aristotle gave us when he introduced it to human beings. The first of the three modes, and we're not going in any particular order, each one is important. The first one we're going to be talking about is ethos, E. T-H-O-S. Loosely translated into English comes out to be ethics. Ethics, or as a speaker, it is your credibility. It's what your listeners know about you. It's what they understand about your sense of authority, your knowledge of the subject. And it's something that they will grant to you. They will say, well, because I know what he is and what he represents and how much experience he is, I'll believe him. You know, some people just have ethos because we know that they're experts in that area. You don't question it. You say, well, if Jack says, Jack, no problem, done, that's it. No more questions anymore. Jack said so, that's it. See, that's ethos. When people talk about you like that, and you have the credibility that requires no further proof, that is ethos. Now, you will have ethos in some areas and not in others. You don't just have ethos. Ethos is something that you will gain in a particular area that your listeners know you have, and therefore they accept your authority, your word, as truth, as fact. They are persuaded by your ethos. Now, you can have it and you can lose it. Ethos isn't something that you just get, then you have it for life. I mean, take a look at Gates. Look at Bill Clinton. Here's a guy who had tremendous ethos and credibility in his role, in his personality, and then what happened? Well, we all know what happened in the White House, and boom, there went his credibility. In the eyes of many people, his authority, his sense of credibility just disappeared. Go back a little bit further, Richard Nixon. Here was a president who had tremendous popularity around the United States. And then what happened? Along came Watergate. Boom, right down at the bottom. His credibility just disappeared. So we know that credibility is something, and ethos is something that you certainly can acquire, but you don't just have it all the time and you keep it. So we'll come back to that again. But let's move on to the second mode of persuasion. And this in the ancient and original Greek was called pathos, P-A-T-H-O-S, pathos. Or perhaps in Greek, one of my Greek students once said to me, you know, Dr. Becker, it is more correctly pronounced in our language as pathos. I thought, okay, fine. So pathos or pathos, whichever you prefer is fine. Loosely translated, this is a word I know you've heard before, but loosely translated into English, it means emotion. It is the appeal to the emotions. It's the ability to move someone, to persuade them because you have touched them emotionally. Now, this, of course, is a huge, huge area for persuasion. Let's take a look for a moment at the probably the most, the medium used more than any other in the world to persuade people. What would that be? Television, of course, right. More things are attempted to be sold to us on television than any other medium that we know of. Now, on television, what's the most advertised product we see on TV these days? The most advertised product, not by brand name, but by type, is automobiles. Automobiles. Now think about, how do they advertise cars? What's happening? Whizzing through leaves, right? Standing on their rear end, gorgeous people draped all over them. I mean, it's amazing. These are actually machines, but they are sold to us with emotion. We are to become emotionally involved in the vehicle. Just watch the next time that you see a TV commercial for a car. You'll see what I mean. And for goodness sakes, we have had practically every organ in the human body come dancing across our screen. They're using pathos to sell us all kinds of things. Your furniture talks to you now on TV. It's all pathos. In fact, if we look at all of the TV commercials that we see today, I'm going to estimate that we're somewhere between 80 and 85, maybe more, of all TV commercials are pathos-based. It's an attempt to persuade us to eat, to buy, to wear, to go, to drive, and all of the rest of it by using emotion. That's the second mode of persuasion. Now, the third mode of persuasion is one that many of you, I'm sure, are very familiar with, comes to us from Aristotle in the ancient Greek as logos, L-O-G-O-S, loosely translated, logic. Something that we use in the business world all the time, and not only in the business world, logic. It's those facts, those figures, the research data, certainly no emotion. It is the attempt to persuade people because it makes sense. It's logical. See? So ethos, pathos, and logos are the three modes of persuasion. Now, when we look at these from the perspective of presentation, and how do you build them into your speech and into your presenting? Now, remember, presentation is a big word. Presentation means, for the coaches at the Speech Improvement Company, we understand what you mean when people say presentation. It's that formal thing, you know, with slides and stopwatches and all that. But when you stop to really think about it, a presentation is any time you talk. Every time you talk. Think about that. What are you doing? You're taking your thoughts out of your brain, your mind, and you are presenting them to someone else. So we see everything as presentation, whether it's those formal occasions in front of a conference or a business meeting, or it's those informal occasions in the cafeteria, in the parking lot, on the telephone, in the elevator with friends. It's all presentation. So you'll find that ethos, pathos, and logos work in all presentation situations. So when we think about presentation, if for today's purposes we want to think about it as those more formal business kinds of things, that's fine. But remember, you're always presenting and frequently you're persuading. So when that's the case, what do we need to know? Well, there are two things. We want to know two things. Number one, since we know that ethos, pathos, and logos work and they are good persuaders, how can you build them right into your presentation? What do you do to put ethos, pathos, or logos right in your presentation? That's one thing that has to be learned. The second thing that has to be learned is, what do you do about the fact that they are already in your presentation? That's right. They're already in your presentation. Think about it for a moment. Some presentation topics already have so much pathos in it that you don't have to bring any more to it. You have to control what's already there. Think about that for just a moment. Some of the topics that we have that we talk about daily that are so filled with pathos. How about things like abortion, welfare, gun control, drugs? I mean, so many topics that we hear discussed and that we talk about are pathos filled. So the question becomes, what do you do with the fact that they're already filled with ethos, pathos, or logos? And guess what? There's ethos, pathos, or logos in your listeners as well, not just in the subjects, but in those who are listening to it. They may be more basically ethos, pathos, or logos people. So as an effective presenter, you need to know something about your listener and what are they likely to be responsive to. No, wait, we're not even done yet. There's ethos, pathos, logos in the locations where you make your presentations. Think about it. Some locations have more or less of that. I recall doing presentation work one time for a major company that took its executive board to Florida. Now, this was in the middle of January. This company was based in Chicago. We went to Florida, and they asked me to do the presentation, the training of presentation skills, by the poolside. Well, for goodness sakes, how much pathos, how much emotion is in that? Here we are trying to learn things, and there was so much pathos around them, I certainly, as the presenter, had to factor that into the way that I approached that presentation situation. We see that all the time. How about ethos? I recall the first time I went to CBS News, CBS in New York, not the news department. I went to CBS. And I was going to do a presentation, and we were going to do it in this particular conference room, and they ushered me into the room, and I was the first one there. And I thought, wow, look at this. This was many years ago, of course. I thought, look at this. Boy, the carpet was dark green, and it was very thick and cushy. There was a long, must have been teak or mahogany table going right down the center of the room. It had to be at least 20 feet long, and it was surrounded by these high back leather chairs, sort of a deep, rich brown leather chairs. On the wall, there was, all the walls were coated with these portraits of famous people like, you know, Walter Cronkite and Fred Friendly and all these people who had become famous for journalism. It was a very impressive room. What were they doing? There was an attempt to show we are credible. And they were. They are. But don't people do that all the time? They conduct meetings in places where they feel more credible. Certain offices are designed to look more authoritative. Of course. So you're going to get ethos, pathos, logos, even in the locations where presentations take place. But wait, there's more, as they say. Ethos, pathos, and logos are also in you. That's right, they're in you. You give off ethos, pathos, and logos the minute you walk in the door. Now I'm asking you, do you have the look of ethos, pathos, or logos? What do you look like? I'm not asking them right or wrong. It's just a question. Now you start to talk. When you start your presentation, do you have the sound of ethos, pathos, or logos? I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just asking the question. What do you look like? What do you sound like? Now, this is not an unusual question. We already think about these things. Now, you may not use the words ethos, pathos, and logos when you get up in the morning to get dressed, but don't you say to yourself, ah, yes, I like this shirt. This shirt makes me look what? Or I will wear these shoes today because these shoes give the appearance of, right? We do it all the time. We don't necessarily call it ethos, pathos, or logos, but we're trying to manipulate, if you will. I use that in the best of senses here. We're trying to manipulate the thinking of other people about, in this case, the way we look. And isn't it true that there are certain words, certain things you would not say in front of your mother? There are certain words, certain topics you wouldn't bring up in the presence of certain people? Why not? You are attempting to manipulate the ethos, pathos, and logos of the relationship, of the situation, of the circumstance. Nothing wrong with that. We do it all the time. We don't necessarily recall those things, ethos, pathos, or logos, but that's what they are. In the purest sense, you are at those moments utilizing ethos, pathos, and logos to persuade others about something you feel or want to be thought of in a particular way about, all right? So you see, ethos, pathos, and logos are not brand new to us. These are new words, perhaps. We use these terms to make it clearer so that when you want to use a particular item of evidence or argument in your presentation, you can identify it as ethos, pathos, or logos and gear it toward the particular topic, the listeners that you have, the location that you're in, and so forth. I had a doctor one time who was delivering a presentation to the National PTA. You know what that is, the Parent Teachers Association, okay? So he came in to rehearse the presentation, and he was going along, and I'm listening to it, and he gave a particular example. And I said, time out, hold on. Now, what is that example you just gave? Now, here, he said, well, it's a good example of the point I'm trying to make. Now, here's the example he gave. He was talking about why there should be a nurse in every elementary school. Why every school, every grade school should have a nurse assigned full-time to the school. So he was making his argument about that particular point to the National PTA, and here's a piece of evidence that he gave. He said he recalled an incident when a fourth-grade girl got a pin stuck in her eyelid. Ooh, so the nurse, the teacher sent her down to the nurse's office. The little girl got down to the nurse's office with this pin sticking in her eyelid, and the nurse was not there. So they called the ambulance, and the girl sat for 10 minutes or so. They came, and they actually took care of her right there on the spot, and she was fine. So I said to the doctor, now, what kind of evidence is that? Why are you using that? And he said, well, because it makes sense. I mean, it's logical. Look at the time that was wasted. Look at the incredible cost of having that ambulance be dispatched and the cost of the time of the people who came to service that young lady. And he made a very, what we would call, logos argument for this particular case. And I said, wait a minute. You know who you're talking to? The National PTA, Parents, Teachers. You know what they're going to think, what they're going to say when you tell them about a fourth grade girl who got a pin stuck in her eyelid? The whole room is going to go, ooh, aw. And he said, perhaps. And I said, what do you mean perhaps? Of course they are. Now you see what was happening here? He was presenting this as a logos argument for why there should be nurses in every school. But the listeners were bound to take it as pathos. Aha. So you see, things can be more than one thing at a time. It doesn't have to be all ethos or all pathos or all logos. You may take an argument, you may take an element of persuasion and create it and shape it into both, in this case, logos and pathos at the same time. You may say a particular thing in a way which, despite what the content of it is, It may be a very pathos content, but what if you say it in a logos way? What if you're trying to compliment someone on their on a new sweater that they bought? Okay, and you really think it looks good and you want to compliment them. So you say, "Gee, Tom, I love that new sweater. It's really very good looking." Well, okay, that certainly is the right thing to say, perhaps, but the way that you said it, the words are pathos, but the delivery was very logos. What if I joined pathos words with pathos delivery? It would sound more like this. "Gee, Tom, I like that sweater. That color looks great on you." You see? You can combine ethos, pathos, and logos with other things, or you can make them all the same way. You make the difference. What we're showing and telling you here today is that you have three things to combine in order to persuade someone, to convince someone that what you are saying is true, should be accepted. You have ethos, appeal to through the credibility of the speaker, pathos, the use of emotion to touch the listener emotionally, and logos, the use of logical, non-emotional evidence to persuade the listener. All three are very powerful. No one is more powerful than the other. You make the difference in the choosing of which is appropriate, for which setting, for which topic, for which point you're attempting to persuade people of. You use the appropriate ethos, pathos, or logo. So, you know, this isn't something that I can tell you, do this, this, or this. Now, we can say to you that given a choice, when you approach someone that you are going to attempt to persuade them, particularly in a business presentation, given a choice, there is one pattern that does seem to work. And we'll just put it out here for you. I'm not recommending that you use it all the time. We know this one happens to be very popular and it does work. Here's how to use these three, ethos, pathos, and logos, in an order that seems to work. First, you lead with pathos, something pleasant, something nice. Start with that. Second, you follow quickly with logos. You say something that is factual, something that is provable, something that is true. That combination will lead you to ethos. People will be more likely to accept and believe and see you as a credible source if you do it in that order. Pathos to logos to ethos. Now, it may not work in every case, so you have to evaluate the given situation, the topic, the content, the setting, and, of course, your own style of delivery. All right? So the main thing we wanted to tell you today is that these are the only three ways to persuade people to do things. In fact, I'm going to leave you today with a challenge. If you can think of a fourth way to persuade people to do things, notify me. Let me know. You and I are going to write a book together because we will do very well. The fact is that these are the only three ways to persuade people to do things. I can put anything you can think of as a persuasive technique into one of these three categories. So think about it. Use them in any and all of your presentations. Those are the three modes of persuasion.
This is the end of this teaching brief. If you have any questions or concerns about what you just heard, or questions about any aspect of human communication, please contact our coaches at speechimprovement.com. That's all one word, speechimprovement.com. Until next time, this is Dr. Dennis Becker saying thanks for listening and bye for now.